previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
And he's on the ice.
Well, he twisted his knee.
His leg looked like it was at a strange angle. They're bringing the stretcher out. People are concerned, right? Even though they were not happy with the way the refs were treating the Caps.
Please tell me your family
except for a member. No, that would have been a nice thing to say. Someone related to me by family stuff screams out, "Old Yeller him! Old Yeller him!" Looks of horror. Appropriate looks of horror. Oh.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
All righty then. Maybe I have forgotten to mention that we're open for breakfast at Chatter.
Brian's coming.
Thank God. We have two people here at the moment, and I don't even know if they wandered in to see the show. Now, we have what's interesting. We are at the corner of Wisconsin Avenue Northwest and Jennifer Street Northwest in Friendship Heights. We are undergoing renovation on the outside. The brickwork is being demolished and reset. And there's tape out in front, so it's possible that people think we're not open. Sadly, you're going to hear this. It drops at 11 o'clock Eastern when we are open completely, and 8 o'clock Pacific where you're not going to be able to get here on time.
That's going to be tough.
But we're open. We're open today, Wednesday. We're open tomorrow, Thursday. We're open the next day, Friday. We're open for business. Luke Rustard is here. Tori Clark is here. Michael Kornheiser is here. Nigel is here to run the board, to do the news. I'll get into the show in a second. Got this nice, nice note. Dear Dr. Hofwoff, a few months ago, the woman to whom I'm now related by marriage and I invited you and the crew to our wedding at the Lodge at Torrey Pines. We were honored to hear you read our announcement on the air. We appreciate you sending the signed RSVP card. Please accept the enclosed challenge coin from the 1st Marine Expeditionary Force, a unit with which I served and where I listened to you via the internet from Iraq. You can put it in the prize closet or display it at Chatter or anything else you see fit. I have a lot of these, and I have them mostly at PTI. I have about 40 or 50 of them.
Wow.
And when I go, Michael will throw them out. But hopefully he'll put them in a case first.
Why don't you put them in a case and bring them to Chatter?
I could do that. I should
behind
do that,
some red actually. Tape. So no
I think
one can
the president has a bowl of them behind his desk.
Oh, not a bowl of candy?
Well,
just a bowl of challenge
too.
Coins?
Yeah.
Also, we have a celebrity sighting from our honeymoon that you will enjoy. On our way back from a week in Portugal, we were standing behind your friend, Louis Black, to board the plane, who Tori knows very well and likes very much.
Love.
I introduced myself by thanking him for playing a USO tour in 2008. He told us he had played in a show in our hometown of Knoxville, Tennessee, before going to Portugal. He was very friendly, and we told him to call us the next time he's in Knoxville. If he does, we'll be sure to send you a big glacierie from Big Orange Country. So there we were, two littles and one big. In the Lisbon airport. I figured you'd appreciate that story. What would have been better if you said, when are you going to play golf with Larry David and Kornheiser?
I think that's a goal for this year, don't you?
Well, the person who can arrange this and who actually has made progress with this is the famous golf announcer and guru, Peter Costas. But he has said, would you do it in Los Angeles? And I've said, I don't really want to go to Los Angeles.
No, Louis comes to this air alive. Sam and Jeanette are still
his
alive
parents
and well.
Are alive,
and,
right?
Yeah.
Thank you again for the card. Please do read my name on the air if you wish so I can get credit for the best thank you note left to right from our wedding. This is Bart. I think it's called, it's Slabberthorne. Bart and Corey. Corey and Bart Slabberthorne. That's an interesting and long last name. So that was nice, and I have this challenge coin. Okay. So today I awaken to walk the dog, and I go downstairs to see what the temperature is because I know there's a freeze warning. And I turn on my phone, and sure enough, last night at 11:43 p.m., from Steve Sands, the following text, I love sports, which meant that the Capitals won.
Yes.
I didn't know if it meant the Wizards won. I know because he's a bigger Caps fan than he's... I didn't think it had to do with the Nats. I didn't think. I thought it was the Caps, and sure enough, I went to the phone, and the Caps had won in overtime. I will tell you, I will talk about those two games following the Scotty Van Pelt on his show, led with the Wizards and the Caps. So if Scotty did it on a national show, I feel I can do it. I will say this. Last night, at about 7:15, I began to panic because I went to NBA TV. And NBA TV on my cable system on, what do I have, Comcast. Is 863. And on 863, on the screen, it said, due to a contractual circumstance, this game is not being shown in your area. Mm. Well, I'd already been on local Comcast Sports 846,
right,
and they had a pregame of the Caps. Now I go to 857, which in my mind is the other local channel, 857.
Okay, I'm tracking.
And they get some. They have something else. They have a basketball game or a high. They have something else. They don't have the Wizards.
Right.
And now in full panic at 7:15 or 7:20, I call the Washington Post. And a guy says, this is Chris. Hey, it's Kornheiser. And I have no idea who Chris is. I have no idea. It's Kornheiser. Well, where is this game? What is going on? Where is the game? And he says, it's on the second Comcast local station. And I go, I don't know where that is. And he goes, it's in the 850s somewhere. And I start going through. ESPN is 850. ESPN2 is 851. Right. ESPN News is 852. ESPNU is 853. CBS Sports is 854. Big Ten is 855. I'm running out of 50s here. 56, boom. It's
go.
On 856. So I got to watch. They were already down 22. They were down 22 in the first quarter.
Can I give you a solution to this?
What?
Call Michael.
Yeah, well, first of all, Michael is always available for those phone calls. I'm sure you're excited about that. But no, on your remote controller.
I think Brian is showing up here.
Hi, Brian.
Sorry to get his table. He is available.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
There is a button. There's A, B, C, and D.
What does that mean?
The C button.
Oh,
if you hit that, it's a game changer. If you hit that on the side of the screen.
I don't know where that is.
When you go back and look at your remote.
A, B, C, D?
Yeah, the C
multiple
button.
Multiple choice questions?
It's a colorful button. Yeah.
The answer is always C. And at that point, all the sports options will immediately appear on your screen.
What I should have done is hit the thing that listens to me and said Wizards game.
That's
and
the blue button.
In my panic, yes. I did not even think to do that.
Yes.
And if the Post wasn't able to help me, I don't know what I would have done.
If you start playing with that C button, you'll never have to worry about any channel ever again. It'll just direct you immediately to
it. Is that right?
Yes.
Same thing.
Did you know where it was?
Well, I actually went to NBA TV first because I prefer the national announcers because they're more critical of the Wizards. I love Bucks and I love the local telecast, but I like to have some criticism of my local team because it reinforces everything I think about them. And then I went there and I saw that contractual thing, and
what?
Then I immediately went to 46. I saw the Caps, but then I remembered there was the – I call it the Comcast 2. It's the Deuce. And so I went there.
I panicked.
And I found it.
I was in full panic. What do you mean I can't see this game?
But like you, I went and I had
down 22.
I had an errand to run, and I came back, and I was like, oh, this will at least be within 10 points, and it was over. 22. I literally, 7:30 p.m.
Did you get it? Did you have it completely with no problem?
Well, I never look at the numbers, right? I hit guide or menu or whatever. And I just look for the titles, and I found it right away.
I don't know
but
what
I just
is.
I was working the remote last night, right?
Three games on the same time.
I wasn't.
If you're a Washingtonian, you've got the Caps, you've got the Wizards, you've got the Nats. So,
and luckily,
the Caps didn't score for the first 30 minutes of game time.
Did you know where the game was? Did you get on the Wizards?
I never got to the Wizards because I was following it on my phone, and it looked out of hand pretty early. So I was focusing on the Caps and the Nats.
I gave up on the Wizards after. Yeah.
So I'm watching the Wizards game, and they're down. The other night when Cleveland was down 21 in the first, I actually thought to myself, I'm not sure I've ever seen this in a playoff game. It just doesn't happen.
Right.
The Wizards are down 22 in the first. I think they close at 18. They give up, and I wrote this down, they give up 76 at the half. 76.
Yeah.
Now, this is a team where Bradley Beal and Scott Brooks all year long talk about the lack of defense and always use the word, this is unacceptable. This is in the playoffs. They're down 18. Now, they're scoring, but they're down 18. They're down 76. They end up closing to 5 at one point. They lose by double figures.
Right.
They lose. And then I guess I wasn't paying attention to this. Bradley Beal had 11. I'm sorry, he had 9. He only had 9 points. Bradley Beal's an all-star.
Yeah.
He had 4 fouls early on.
But how many minutes did he play?
Not many, because he was in foul trouble. He was in the odd NBA foul trouble, which rarely exists. But I think he had 4 fouls somewhere early on in the third quarter.
Let me see minutes. Oh, he only played 24 and a half minutes.
Yeah.
So that's not a lot. 9 isn't enough. So there's this great quote by John Wall in the paper today. And he says, my job is to let Beal be the leading scorer. Just, this is the question after this is, do you believe a word of this? This is John Wall. My job is to let Beal be the leading scorer. Some nights it's going to be my opportunity when I've got it going to make a lot of shots, but I'm trying to get him going as much as possible and get him the most shots on the team because he's our best scorer. He's our best guy that should get the most shots. He's our two guard. I want him to be the same aggressive guy that he was when I was out. There's not a word of that that's true. Not a word. All right?
Yeah, no, and... I'm weird in the
John
sense
Wall
that
had a very good game.
The Wizards are my number one for DC teams. Just growing up, going out with my parents to the Capitol Center and then taking the tickets down to Verizon. And I have to say, I'm the most disenchanted now. This is even harder than the Arenas gun incident. And the reason why was if you watched the game last night, Ty Lawson, who was playing in China
yesterday,
a week ago.
Yesterday.
Was playing in China a week ago, had a better grasp of the offense, played more defense,
so true,
and dove on the ball, dove on the floor, getting all the loose balls, and showed more heart and effort than any single one of the max contract guys. And I'm watching the game, I go, done. This team is done. Blow it up. Fire Ernie. We like Ernie. Ernie's a nice guy. I'm sorry. You got to go. If you can get anything for Wall or Beal or Otto Porter, who's a 95-year-old man out there, get something. Just blow it up. The chemistry's dead. Start from zero. Napalm. It's over.
It's Ty Lawson. How? A, why hasn't he been in the league? And two, Thomas Satoransky, see ya. Ty Lawson was terrific. And as Luke said, wasn't even in the United States of America.
And ran the offense better than John Wall, who's going to get $44 million in 2022.
I think it so speaks to the tragedy of Washington teams that this nice young person says, my number one team is the Wizards.
Right?
And I thought the Wizards last night were going to save me from watching the Caps, right? Because that was going to be just too painful. And they didn't. And I kept going from the Wizards to the Nats, who were kind of saving me, and then to the Caps, and I can't watch this, and I go back to the Wizards. And it just kept getting worse and worse and worse. Yeah, but you had to stay up till 11:45, and I'm getting texts from my son, Colin.
I love sports.
Colin was texting, this is awful, this is terrible, I'm going to kill myself, no, it's not worth the effort. And then his last text, which I think was from a bar, was, I need a cardiologist.
Caps, so
they,
that's a favorite.
They win. This is, now this is an oddity, I would think. This is the third game in three in this series where the road team has won in overtime, right in a row. The Caps won, by the way, they had lost for two games. They're back in.
But I'm going to take some of Luke's angst. They won. God bless them. They won. They killed their fans along the way.
Maybe
Holtby was
the right choice.
But they were so not intense during the game, and I was getting angrier and angrier
that
they were being – they were so laid back, and I switched to Chopped. Because I hate Chopped. Wait, I hate Chopped because the people are so mean. You never want to root for any one of the contestants because they're mean and unpleasant.
Isn't it?
It is a cooking show, but it's a competition.
Okay.
But I switched to that to watch people being mean and intense, which I was not getting from the Caps game.
Michael, watch Caps?
I was watching the Caps from afar. The Caps make me a little bit too nervous, so I have a little bit more control because of bath time. I delay the Nats game, and then I slowly catch up to it.
Right.
So I was watching the Caps, but I thought they were going to take the energy from their overtime loss in game two, where they were skating on fire, and bring that into that first period.
One would
because
think.
This is, they always get to these slow starts. Even with the early goals in the last couple games, they all came on these big penalties right at the end of the periods, and they just didn't have that last night.
Nigel, watch.
No, well, as you know, with my voice like this, I was recruited to be a lead singer for Clarence Frogman Henry tribute band.
Yeah.
No, I had to go to a movie screening last night. When I got out of it, I was like, what are all the DC teams doing? And it was just astonishing to see the Wizards just getting pummeled.
The Wizards now appear to, they come home, and the conventional wisdom is the series doesn't start till the home team loses or wins, but till the home team loses. But they appear to be out of it. The other team seems to be better.
Yes.
The Caps are not out of it. They're not out of it.
Not at all.
Stop this. You started this last year.
I know they're not
you
out of it.
Stop it.
And last year they had a lot of overtime games against Toronto. But can I go back to the Wizards just for one second?
Because you just said to blow them up.
Yeah, because they need to be blown up. I mean, let's say the miraculous happens and they come back and somehow win this series, which they absolutely will not do. It doesn't paper over the fact that they are now in basketball purgatory. They have three max contracts for guys who cannot get you anywhere. So the best you're going to do is a 6th, 7th, or 8th seed, and you're never going to get the draft pick to get better.
Right.
So you're dead for the next 5 to 7 years. This is a perpetual either mediocrity an incredible amount of hope based on the backs of youth that we saw with Arenas and Caron Butler and Antoine Jameson at times and Larry Hughes, and then it goes back down sinking. It's terrible. It's depressing, and it's a great basketball town, and it's over. Just think about that. The Wizards are over till 2030.
Till 2030?
Yes, it's over.
I will not.
It's over.
I'll be here at 2030. We'll take a break. When we come back, Brian Windhorst will talk about other things having to do with the NBA when we return, and his new fashion statement. Brian is now wearing a black undershirt. We need to talk about this at great length, I think. Although Brian will say, I don't want to talk about this. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Movement Sunglasses ad. This makes me very happy
because
we found the sunglasses yesterday.
There are a lot of false accusations.
No, there was innuendo. There were not accusations.
People having breakfast were being strip searched.
So we found them, and Michael picked them out for me, and mine are blue, and they're really, really nice.
Yeah, they're nice.
Spring is right around the corner, and Movement is dropping all new sunglasses to get you ready for the warmer weather. Michael, can you describe? They're very nice glasses.
Yeah.
They're blue.
They look like state trooper glasses.
They look like something I think you said an old man should wear.
They look age appropriate.
Really? Okay. Okay. Here are the thought starters. Here's my problem. I really like them. I'm going out to the beach late next week.
That's right.
I'm going to wear them in the car so that if I get stopped by a state trooper, I could say, you and me, we're sort of the same, aren't we?
Just don't give me a ticket.
Yeah. Here's my problem with sunglasses. I got all these cheap pairs that look terrible, but every time I buy a $200 pair, I feel like I got ripped off. Well, our friends at Movement, MVMT, yeah, the watch guys, they kind of felt the same way. So they thought, how about we make quality, trendy sunglasses at a fair price? These things aren't plastic. They're acetate. You can get them polarized. They start at just $70. These are seriously go-to shades. They are high-quality premium acetate frames. It's no cheap plastic. You've got to see them. They have lots of styles to choose from, classic. I guess I have classic, Michael.
Very fittingly, yours are called the Outlaw.
Trendy, round,
I like that.
Aviator, mirrored, I don't like mirrored. It's Cool Hand Luke. It's so old. Polarized for him and for her. You're sure to find the perfect pair. You can get 15% off today with free shipping and free returns by going to mvmt.com/Tony. You know Movement for how they've revolutionized the watch industry. Now is the time to check out their sunglasses. Go to mvmt.com/Tony and join the movement.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is sent in by Loyal Little, as he signs it, Chris Monty in Toronto, Ontario. And he writes, last year I submitted the track Hello by Jaunt, J-A-U-N-T, to be used as music bumper for the show. I believe it has been featured on a couple of occasions. Jaunt has just released a new EP. EP is extended play, right? That's what they call it?
That's right, yeah.
Called Cue, and I've attached a track from the EP called Intimate Sunset for your consideration. If you or your listeners want to buy or listen to more of the EP, please visit jauntband.bandcamp.com. This is very lovely.
It is very, very nice.
Very, very lovely. Yes. Very nice to hear. Brian Windhorst joins us now. It's been a long time since we've talked to Brian, because Brian lately is in Los Angeles all the time and is probably, it's too early in the morning for us to wake him. Have we talked about your fashion choices? Have I expressed my feelings about your fashion choices, my wonderment at how we came to these things? Not in a bad way. I just wondered how we get to black T-shirts, because I think you know that I've written you that I think you should start wearing ascots and monocles. I think that would be a great look for you. But how did we get to black T-shirts?
I know how you feel about it, but no, we haven't talked about it. But it's been passed through from various PTI individuals. And I do believe you and Olbermann picked me apart one day, and I was receiving the information from Kelleher.
Yes.
It was a terrific, ego-building experience.
This is all we really have to do is comment on people who we like and what they look like at any given time, because television is a visual medium. You have gone to the black T-shirt. I just wonder how that came about, and your thoughts, of course, about an ascot and a monocle.
Well,
You're a little young for the ascot and the monocle, but you've got 30 years to use it,
right,
making it your own.
So Rachel Nichols, she said to me, I don't think you should wear ties on the jump anymore. I we talk about basketball, and we want to kind of take down the want to make it a little bit more casual. And she said, you should stop wearing ties. And so I don't always wear that those T-shirts, but sometimes I do. And you're not the only person to suggest it. John Buchagross is also now on that bandwagon. He was urging me to do it as well.
To wear an ascot?
Yeah.
Yes. Not enough people wear them.
No, not nearly enough.
And a young guy can get away with it.
Sure.
An old guy looks like it doesn't look good. I'm too old for an ascot, but I think you can get away with it. It's just something to consider.
I don't even know where to get one.
Ascot.com. Ascot, yes.
You think they're big sellers enough to support an entire front? I don't even know I don't even know the proper technique to wear it. I mean, I would have to like go on YouTube and
oh yeah, but they come fully formed and they tell you how to do it. And for years, Roland Martin on TV wore. He was the last of the ascot man. But you could do it. You sneak it out. You know what? When you're going to be on news or something like that, when you're going to be on a subsidiary channel, you should just try it once and see what the reviews look like. You should do that.
So now here's the question. I'm scheduled to be on PPI today.
Yes. Oh.
Should I?
Oh.
Yes.
Fantastic.
Yes.
It'd be fantastic. Wilbon and I would just go crazy about how good that looked. We'd be very, very happy if you did that. I know I would.
I don't know how. I don't even know if you can buy these things or if you have to order them. I don't know if I can procure one.
Where are you physically? Well, what city are you in?
I am in Omaha, Nebraska, which is known as the Ascot capital
of the Midwest.
Yeah, it really is
the Ascot capital of the Midwest. I mean that you can just go downtown and stand there and scream out Ascot, and 15 people will come over to you with one.
And Warren Buffett has one.
Warren Buffett, just call Buffett. Buffett has lots of them.
I could go door to door and just borrow one.
I think it's a great idea. All right, so let me get to basketball briefly. I had to eat a lot yesterday about Dwayne Wade. I mean, I really did, because I had called him the ghost of Dwayne Wade, and I had said that Philadelphia was going to win that series in 4 or 5, and I got crushed, and justifiably, because Wade had 28 points, and Wade played great. He did, and I didn't think he had it in him anymore, and then yesterday in some lame defense, I just said, well, let's see him do it again, and maybe he will. Where do you think that series is going, Philadelphia-Miami?
Well, you know, Miami is... They're a tricky team. That you know, they're really not that talented.
No,
You know, if you go down the roster, there's nobody on that roster. You're like, oh my god, that guy's a difference maker. And they play a stupid number of close games. Like they had, I think, 19 games this year was within one possession at the end. Ooh. That means that one out of every four games came down to the last second, last shot, and so. I expected this series to be close because Miami plays close games and Embiid wasn't 100%. So I'm not surprised at all it's 1-1, but you were not alone in thinking that about Dwayne Wade. In fact, there were times when I think Eric Spoelstra felt that way because Wade's playing time really dwindled towards the end of the season. And I think Dwayne thought, oh, they're saving me for the playoffs. And then game one, Dwayne didn't play that much.
Right.
And I don't know. I think Dwayne has kind of looked in the mirror here. This could be it. And so I think you know he did this to Philly in February. He had this incredible game against Philly in February, where he had 15 of the last 17 points, and he hit the game winner. And he, I don't know if you remember, he jumped on the scorer's table and pounded his chest. And so he's had a couple of great moments that if you are a casual fan, you remember. But in between, there's been a lot of not-so-good nights, and he's been kind of quasi-benched. And so I think that's probably what you're going to see in this series, which is I don't know if we'll see. That could be it for Wade. You know, he could – do have another moment or two again, but that might be the last great game that he has, maybe for his career, honestly. I mean, I do think there's a good chance he's going to hang it up. But one thing I will say is, regardless of how it goes, and I expect Philly to win the series, Miami's going to play them close because that's what Miami does. So, you know, I think 6 games or so, and I think Miami will put another scare into them. I think it'll be 2-2 going back to Philly, and if nothing else, the Sixers will get a little bit of a dose of the playoff pressure, and that'll probably be good for him.
So Wilbon, who Wilbon loves Dwayne Wade, you know, if Dwayne Wade hadn't been from Chicago, Wilbon might not even know his name. But as we know, anybody who has ever passed through Chicago, including Lewis and Clark, I'm sure, are the greatest people in the history of the world, because Chicago, it touches you. And just makes you great, according to Wilbon. So he was delighting in attacking me about Dwayne Wade. He also said this, and I think there is some merit in this, and I'm springing this on you, but he said that in the history of basketball, Dwayne Wade is the third best two guard ever behind Jordan and Kobe. And I tried very quickly to dispel that, but I really couldn't immediately, because I came up with a lot of point guards, but I haven't come up with a lot of two guards, and that I could make that claim. And I even said, well, this is not fair because Frazier and Monroe playing together on the Knicks, I mean, they're both ones and twos. I don't really know what to do with that. But what do you – can you refute that Dwayne Wade is the third best two guard ever?
I can't. This has actually been discussed over the years. I mean, maybe Wilbon was the first to discuss it, but it's been – I've read stories where people have done a breakdown to support it.
Okay.
I will argue this. I will say that his 2006 finals performance, and I know if you're a Mavericks fan, even bringing it up still causes your face to flush in anger. But his 2006 finals performance is one of the great finals performances of all time. And he also had a great 2011 finals, the year that the Mavericks beat the Heat. He was far and away the best player on the Heat in that series. And had LeBron even been a C player, even if he had given a C performance, the Heat would have won that title, I think. So he had a couple of great finals, and then he had a couple of great moments with LeBron in the years that they won. So you look at his record of playing at the highest level, plus his longevity.
Plus Chicago. Plus the fact he lives in Chicago. Yeah,
yeah. And he played one glorious season with the Bulls, which everybody will always forget.
Yeah, all right. All right, so maybe Wilbon is right about that. Let me move to this other thing that I think is a story, and of course Mike thinks is no story at all because it might bring some small measure of discredit to Greg Popovich. And that is, what is the rift between the Spurs and Kawhi Leonard? And in your opinion, is it breached to such a degree that he will never play there again?
Well, I'm just going to – Greg Popovich is having a temper tantrum right now. And it's not something I've ever seen him have. And I don't think it's the greatest look for him, to be honest with you. When you look at the Kawhi Leonard situation, you have to break it into two pieces. One is the fact that he's got an injury that he doesn't think he should play on, that the Spurs training staff obviously thinks he can, and his doctors, and I'm sure he's not making it up. You know, he's got doctors. Now, the Spurs can attack the veracity of those physicians, but he's got somebody telling him don't play. So this is, you know, to the end of time, we're going to have players on different pages than teams with injuries. I mean, right now, Embiid is on a different page
yes.
than his team about injury. So that's a standalone issue. That's one thing. What's different is how the two sides have handled it here. Kawhi has gone off, and that's not a great look for him. But Popovich has been attacking him and his, you know, representatives daily. Daily. That's what I mean by him throwing a temper tantrum. This is not helping. He's cutting him loose. He's wrapping him on the knuckles daily.
Yes, and it seems to be.
I don't think it's smart at all. In fact, I would almost say that one of the things we're seeing here is Popovich is an uncharted waters. For everything that he has accomplished, this is not something he's ever dealt with before. You know, he is such the sage where everybody goes to him like the oracle and gets advice. But this is something where he may need to seek advice from somebody else because – the Spurs are not. He may need a wartime consigliere,
okay.
to put it, because the Spurs don't deal with stuff like this normally. Tony, they normally have their stuff together. So to get around to it, I think if the Spurs trade Kawhi Leonard, it could be like the Milwaukee Bucks trading Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. They could cast themselves into the abyss of a small market mediocrity for 30 years. And so if I were them, I would mend the fences as fast as possible. And I think that's possible because a year ago, he and LaMarcus Aldridge were done with each other, and it was equal on both sides. They ended up coming together, getting on the same page, and now he's praising LaMarcus like he's a son.
Yes.
And,
yes.
You know, so, and ultimately, there's so much money and so much at stake that I think Kawhi can be brought back. But if he doesn't, Tony, and if he does become available, because if he doesn't sign the extension this summer, he has to be traded. And if he's, because you can't let him walk with you in a year, you know, without for nothing. And if he's traded, the balance of power in the NBA will shift majorly. And so I still believe they've got to get back together. But, you know, I believe Greg Popovich is not helping matters right now.
Well, I've got one last question here, and it centers on Anthony Davis to some degree. New Orleans has won twice in Portland. It's not all about Davis, but it's about Davis, and it's about Karl Anthony Towns, and it's about Joel Embiid. You know, it's about the kid in Milwaukee. Are we seeing a return of big men in the NBA? Albeit not back to the basket, not the old days, because they float outside. But the numbers that are being put up by big guys are very impressive right now. And you know, that goes against, to some degree, you know, three-point shooting, and that's all you work for. Are we seeing a trend to that?
Well, I went to the first game of that series in Portland, and I'd say, you know, this is Anthony Davis's sixth season. We've had him for a while. That was his first playoff win, and he got his second last night. He is absolutely playing like a man on a mission. I mean, he's diving on the floor. He's all over defensively. And so I think, you know, what you've seen here in the NBA progression is, you know, first you had to be big. You know, and if you were big, you really had a great chance to be successful. And then as it went on, it moved to you wanted to be athletic. And the big men sort of kind of came out of the game a little bit. And now what we have here is this, starting to be this stream of incredible athletes that are both big and athletic. Now, I mean, LeBron is big and athletic, but I'm talking about 7 feet kind of athletes. And, you know, it's going to come to a point where, you know, this is going to be like, you know, like the Rob Gronkowski, go get me a 7-foot freak athlete, and they're going to be looking for them. They're hard to find, and they're sometimes fragile. But my God, when you have one, it can be changing. Now, Antetokounmpo in Milwaukee has not figured out how he can take over games yet. There's going to be a moment, I believe, where the light's going to come on and he's going to realize, I can't be stopped. I'm going to take this game from you. But he hasn't arrived yet. Anthony Davis in his sixth year, he's a little bit more experienced than Giannis. Anthony Davis is now figuring it out. And we're seeing it. And combined with this other guy they have, Drew Holiday, who he spent the last 3 years of his career just completely debilitated with injuries. He's finally healthy, and he's really smart, and he's great on defense. He's got great size. That combination, that twosome, they are coming into their own right in front of our eyes. And it's really fun to watch, and they are now a team that you really have to pay attention to in these playoffs, because almost every night they're going to have the best player. And you, Tony, know whether you've been to Chicago or not, if that's the case in basketball. By the way, Anthony Davis is a Chicago kid.
I know.
I'm waiting for Wilbon to
he'll get on it tonight, believe me.
Issue that.
he'll get on it tonight.
Special things can happen when you got a player like that.
Thank you, Brian. We will see you later and talk to you later on PTI. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Tony.
Brian Windhorst, boys and girls. We will take a break. We will come back with the news. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show. The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the first Leaf ad. I'm dedicating this to the wine tyrant of Tunlaw, because we have now gone through 3 bottles of the most recent case of wine that my son bought for me. And I have written down on the cards that we get, I have started the rating process.
Oh, fantastic.
I have written what I liked about these wines or didn't like about these wines, what Carol liked or didn't like about these wines.
Ooh, tasting notes.
So, yeah, so I think I just write, I like this a lot.
Taste the tea.
Or I like this, or that's okay.
This tasted like freedom.
I haven't written anything like that. So because that the important thing is not to just drink them, but to rate them, because they can't help you if you don't help them help you. This is the only wine club tailored to you. The more wine you taste and rate, the better they customize your box based on the wines you like. You get an introductory 3-pack of wine for just $5 a bottle. That usually goes for $20 a piece. You get them for $5 each. I want to do this. Michael, how can you help me do this? I'm taking my notes. Am I doing the right thing?
Yes.
This is for first lead.
What's even easier is that their rating system is a thumbs up or a thumbs down.
Well, then why am I writing things down on cards?
Well, I like the effort.
Yeah, I'm doing that. Their experts are constantly exploring new wines for me to taste and rate.
Firstly, you have a great-looking Malbec arriving in your next box.
Fantastic. I haven't rated these wines yet.
I'll take the Malbec. Liz Logan.
I think the pressure's going to kill him.
Yeah. Firstly, created an introductory 3-pack of wine for me based on my flavor profile. And with the introductory pack, I got all three for $5 each. Normally, these bottles of wine go for $20, if not more. When the bottles arrived, I tasted them. And they want me to say I rated them online. I didn't. But Michael will be able to use my information to rate these online. First Leaf will take these ratings and then select new wines for all of you based on your taste. And with First Leaf, you never have to worry about spending money on a bad bottle of wine. They guarantee you will love the wine you buy or they will give you your money back. So try First Leaf Club today, where buying great wine is simple. To get your 3-pack of introductory wines for only $15, go to tryfirstleaf.com/Tony. That's 3 wines for only $15 on your first order at tryfirstleaf.com/Tony. One more time for First Leaf. Try tryfirstleaf.com/Tony.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is sent to us by Dennis Brennan. This is a Dropkick Murphys song.
Yes.
And he writes, I just sent a Dropkick Murphys song to Jingles from iTunes. I should have mentioned my son is Tim Brennan, lead guitarist. Love the show and thanks. These are your boys. These are your
lovely
people.
Love the Dropkick Murphys and love that they have given us blanket permission to play the songs, all of them, whenever. So, and this song
it's
is...
a good get.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. These guys
like
are
Luke
fantastic.
Luke is back in college.
Yeah, that's right.
This song is called 4/15/13, which is the date of the bombing at the Boston Marathon.
Where and you were in school.
And
yes.
You were, yes, you were up there
Michael
for that,
was Michael. In Boston for that. Luke, were you were not in Boston for that.
No,
you
I was working. In NBC. But a lot of my friends were there, and it was touch and go because we couldn't reach some of them for a while. So it was scary. Scary.
The marathon was run yesterday. The Boston Marathon was Patriots Day yesterday. In Boston, Massachusetts, was it not? Oh, Monday. Is that what it was?
Yeah.
All right, so, Michael, if people as accomplished as the Dropkick Murphys or unaccomplished and just aspiring and wonderful, if they want to send us music.
Don't let this one intimidate you. Please send your music into the show. Send it to Jingles at TonyKornheiserShow.com.
And what are we selling on the website? What kind of clothing and hats? It's, again, 34 degrees this morning when I walked the dog.
That TK Show knit hat is looking better than ever.
Yes.
But we do have the Reset the Board to Zero Nigel shirt that made its appearance at the Boston Marathon.
Yes,
that's
very
right.
Excited about
that's
that.
Right. That
very
was very
excited
very nice.
About that.
And we have t-shirts here in-house. We have chatter t-shirts for
how
only
much? How much?
$12.
Just $12.
As a t-shirt addict. That is the best deal you can find.
That absolutely is.
$12.
Does that
not
include
$40
sales tax?
At the Jimmy Buffett show. These are $12.
I don't know if it includes sales tax. $12. You're walking out of here, it costs you $12.
$12.
Yeah. It's
and
pretty good.
$12 American dollars.
I will sign them if you want.
You have to bring one of those paint pens, though, gold and or silver only. No
what have
black.
You got? What is your news?
Mr. Tony, we will start off with baseball. We will get to the Nationals in a moment, but we will start off with the Anaheim, or what are they called? No, the Los Angeles Angels now.
I think they're the
Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim.
It is some incredibly stupid, complicated name.
Do you remember?
They're the California Angels or the Anaheim Angels.
Yes,
and let's end this nonsense.
Right. Shohei Ohtani, who was brilliant in his last outing.
Well, he was brilliant twice, but he was pitching against the Oakland A's twice.
Yes.
Now you're pitching against the Boston Red Sox. a team that is going into last night's game tied for the second most runs scored in all of baseball with a composite batting average of .275. They hit.
Yeah,
they hit.
Yeah, hitting very well. And he had a terrible night. Now, after just two innings left after 66 pitches.
He said, get me out of here. People are yelling at me, and I have a blister.
Yeah.
But he no said tingling.
No tingling in his hand, but a blister on his right middle finger.
Yes.
But he couldn't, none of his breaking balls were, you know, finding the strike zone, and they just waited about any time there was something in the strike zone, they just crushed it.
This was my prediction yesterday on PTI, that this would be a welcome to the majors moment. Because Boston was getting out of literally the North Pole.
Yes.
I mean, it's been so cold there that this would feel to them like we can finally play baseball. This is the same thing. I'm watching the Nats last night against the Mets, and it looks like it's 15 degrees.
It's just miserable.
It just looks awful.
I don't know how they can play with all the gear they wear when it's that cold.
They're blowing on their hands constantly, and crazy Gio Gonzalez from Miami
is wearing
short sleeves last night.
Yeah, but
didn't last. Six, by the way.
But they had an easy time of it against the Mets.
Easy time of it. When they came to the mound to take Gio out, they were up 3-2. There were two on for the Mets. And on one of the rare occasions this year, the Nats bullpen went 3 2/3 and allowed no runs.
The Nats also, I think, are something like 45-15. I mean, it's obviously a bit different than that. But in the last few years at that stadium, they dominate there.
Yeah, Gio's 11-1 at Citi Field.
They were 6 games back, having swept the Nats in D.C. for a 3-game series, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, in New York. I thought they were going to be 9 back when that ended, heading to L.A. in a very, very bad state.
And now
they got the 6-run eighth the other night on Monday night. Last night, they won again last night. Doolittle, who I trashed the other day, got a save. They are now 4 back. Could be 5, but could be 3.
Trey Turner, who looked like Shredder last night with his little ski mask on.
Yes.
Welcome to 2018. He's starting to hit the ball.
Ryan Zimmerman drove in a run.
I called it because it's Matt. He had been 0-9 in his previous at-bats, and he just knew he was due to get one in. I was saying to Luke during the break, what's really encouraging is to see guys like Defoe and Severino find rhythms and start to pump each other up. They're doing the Dos Amigos thing right now, which I think is just a jab at the Mets salt shaker. But you look at how weather's affecting the entire season.
Oh.
I think the Nats got swept primarily because of the cold weather affecting some of their starting pitching, and then you have the whole Rendon getting tossed. But the Mets are losing these games because of the cold weather.
I felt that the tremendous trouble the Nats would be in is because they could not start either Scherzer or Strasburg against the Mets. And they've won two. They beat DeGrom. Well, they didn't really beat DeGrom.
Right.
I mean, he was out of the game. They beat Wheeler, who's not one of their studs. But they haven't. Do they face the Dark Knight of Gotham? Do they face Syndergaard?
No.
Stephen Matz tonight.
They have a chance to sweep it, and you have to before you go out for that West Coast road trip.
Big deal.
Per the weather, though, I kind of agree with what Anthony Rizzo said. I don't know if you have less games, but I would be all in favor of pushing the start of the season a little bit further back.
No,
they
no.
They moved it up this year. Look, that's the critical phrase. They used to have double headers.
Yes.
Now, you can go day-night and get two different admissions if you want.
But
when they wiped out double headers and they have interleague, the games in at least half the stadiums in the country, or stadia, if more correctly, it's too cold. It's just too cold. And this is a bad lingering winter. But in the upper Midwest, it's like this all the time.
You have an outdoor stadium now in Minnesota.
Minnesota.
And let's say opening day
Tori,
for the rest
you are
of
very
time.
Skeptical.
I'm so skeptical. I mean, this is just another sign of how soft we're getting. Come on. And saying that it's really hard on the Nats playing this weather. Well, the other team is playing at the same time in the same weather. Come on.
Okay. No, but I think in terms of the fan experience.
Wear those cute knit Tony Kornheiser hats.
Yeah, wear a hat.
I mean, look at
the
what
Nats
happened.
Last night. They were Lawrence of Arabia. They were wearing all sorts of things.
Yeah.
But look at that game the Nats had against the Mets, the Sunday night game, like a week ago in Nats Park or 2 weeks ago. There were 6,000 people there.
There's nobody there. You're
because it
attendance.
Was the frozen tundra.
Yeah.
So it's just not...
You're only banking your season ticket holders then because nobody else is coming
to
that.
They're just not games. Mr. Tony, we'll go to football or a possibility of a sponsorship in football. Adidas has made a comment about Colin Kaepernick and said, if he signs on an NFL team, we would definitely want to sign him. Is that a real offer?
It's gutless.
Yeah.
It's gutless. Yeah. If you see value in him and you want to take this particular person who is notorious at the moment, who is polarizing at the moment, but will sell a lot of product to a group of people that really like him at the moment, then do it. But don't say only if you're signed by an NFL team.
Yeah.
Where's the guts in that? Right? Am I right?
Yeah, I agree with you. I also think Kaepernick has shown that he definitely puts his money where his mouth is. So he would probably take the endorsement and funnel that money to the organizations of which he believes in. I don't think it would be something along the lines of selling out. But gosh, help us if we get the Black Lives Matter t-shirt sponsored by Adidas and how that plays out. I agree with you. Why put yourself in this situation if you're a company like this? Just say, hey, we support Colin Kaepernick. We believe in what he wants to do. People are going to rally behind you. If someone boycotts you, they'd say, have every major soccer player in the world. We could be out of the U.S. market tomorrow.
There's too much
be happy.
Back padding on this.
It's disingenuous.
Yes. It is. It just is. Yeah.
Did anybody see Colin Kaepernick walking in? I guess he was walking in for the deposition.
No.
And he had his attorneys with him, this and that. And I'm in the Colin Kaepernick camp, right? I am. He's wearing a Malcolm X t-shirt. And I thought, do you have to do that? It's a little F you. It also complicates what he says he's all about, right? And I just thought that was a misstep on his part or his people's part.
What else?
Stormy Daniels, we remember her talking about the alleged assailant in a Las Vegas parking lot who said, basically threatened her to be quiet about the sexual tryst she had with President Trump.
Of all of the things that she said on television, I believed every single thing she said 100%, but this was the one that
said, the one that
I'm not sure. But now she's released a sketch of Tom Brady.
Yes, it appears that Tom Brady
or Bon Jovi.
And we're still trying to account for his whereabouts at that period of time in Las Vegas.
I mean, if you're Tom Brady and you see that, you go, what?
It did not say Tom Brady to me. I know it did to everyone
really,
else.
It did?
Well, if it was Tom Brady, you'd have a little dimple. The person would have a dimple. I was telling these guys, I was really hoping it would look like Bo Dietl or Donald Trump Jr. Because I would have been so happy.
So, Mr. Tony, this last weekend, I was in West Palm Beach, Florida, spring training home of the Nationals. Mm-hmm. Where Stormy Daniels was performing next to Mr. Trump's golf course Ultra Gentleman's Club. I did not get the $25 ticket. However, I did drive up and got a picture of the sign. You can see it on Instagram at Luke Russert, LukeRussert. We love the little followers. I always respond to your DMs. And I got the picture and I took it. And then out of nowhere, this lady comes up and she's about a 65-year-old nurse. And she takes a picture of the sign and she goes, is it okay for women to go to that? Because I would really like to watch it. I'm a presidential history buff.
Absolutely.
I said, you got to go, ma'am. Yeah. You have to go.
So this is the Make America Horny Again tour, which she says she doesn't like. She doesn't like the name.
Maha.
But she hasn't actually said, I will not perform under these conditions.
And this was put along the president's motorcade route.
Is that right?
Yes.
No. Well,
okay. By the way, I would also point out, getting back to the sketch with Tom Brady not participating in the New England Patriots voluntary camp. Is there a possible tie there?
It is voluntary.
I just think at some point we're going to look back and we're going to date when the Patriots
went over
the side. And we might be looking at it.
Yes.
We might be.
I forget, were you going to talk about Mike Pompeo? Were you going to do that later? Do you want me to do that?
You can do that now.
I feel like, what's one of the, Peter Brady? When my voice changes.
Voice cracks.
Good episode.
It was a great episode, yes. CIA Director Mike Pompeo apparently met with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un over the Easter weekend to lay the groundwork for a meeting with President Trump and Kim Jong-un to take away the nuclear weapons in
I'm going to defer to Tory, because Tory has handled issues like this where she's had to get out and say why this is good or why this is bad. This seems to me fine. It seems to me that you want to have a meeting like this, that you want to do advance work, that you want to make sure that both sides understand totally what's involved here, so that if you're going to make a big splashy meeting, it goes off as smoothly as possible. I am not outraged even a little by this. I think it's smart What do you think?
I agree. And plenty of really, really smart, talented people would disagree with us and tell us why we're wrong.
Yes.
But I believe keep your friends close, your enemies closer. Trump's already said he's going to meet with a guy. That was the news. So let's try to get the most out of it. So I'm actually, what I'm shocked about is they actually pulled it off with very few people knowing at the time.
Yeah, because it's 3 weeks after Easter.
People may not know this, but there is historical precedent for this. Madeleine Albright went over to North Korea for a negotiation. Clapper, a few years ago, went over to North Korea. There have been instances where American policymakers have been trying to get prisoners released from North Korea. So there are open lines of communication. I was in the DMV about a month ago, and there are communications across that border. It's isolated, but it's not that isolated as much as the sort of draconian visions that we have.
I think it's smart.
So it is smart. Sure. And you, especially on what Tori said, your guy's going there. You got to foam the runway a little bit. You got to make sure that things are going to be what you perceive them to be.
Okay.
And one last story. By the way, I'll tease this. Over the next couple of days, I do have some great Florida Man stories that we'll share with you. But
good.
We want to say melancholy happy trails to actor Harry Anderson, who was most people probably knew him from his time as the judge on Night Court. He passed away the other day at the age of 65.
In reading the obituary, it was pretty interesting to see what Harry Anderson had to say. He hasn't been on TV in a long time,
right.
I guess.
Yeah, the last show
he was a street musician. I'm a magician. He's a busker.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how he started. That's what he was. And he writes, Cheers was my first acting job, but it was basically the character I had developed on the street. That's how I made my living, hustling drinks in bars and quarters on the streets. And he later said, I am richer than Davy Crockett. I can settle back and do what I want to do, and what I want to do is card tricks and magic. And so he just left the limelight, and afterwards, he said, I don't understand why guys have that Don Knotts syndrome of having to be out there.
Ouch.
I guess Don Knotts, was out there till he is 80s or something like that. And so Harry Anderson voluntarily did
he
what
said,
he
I'm
did.
Done. Yeah.
Young man.
65.
Pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd,
pretty
actually,
good,
I'd seen a
pretty
stand-up
much
comedy.
Fun on TV.
Yeah, I'd seen a stand-up comedy. He was actually very funny.
Okay.
Very funny.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back with Old Guy Radio. And we'll talk, certainly we're going to talk about Barbara Bush, the passing of Barbara Bush. And I think we'll also talk about that engine that blew up. I know nobody thinks I want to do that, but I...
This is very brave of you.
I think you have to talk when the engine blows up.
Yeah. Confront your fears.
Talk about it. Yeah, I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Doo-Wah Diddy Diddy, but not by Manfred Mann.
No.
This is Old Guy Radio for the day with the Exciters, who I only know from Tell'em. I didn't have any idea, in terms of critical commentary, I had no idea that Manfred Mann did not write that song themselves.
Right.
I had no idea.
This seemed to be the definitive, there seemed to be the definitive version of the song.
Yes.
Manfred Mann. But yeah, it was written by Jeff Berry and Ellie.
Greenwich.
Greenwich.
That's the Brill Building.
Recorded.
They are Carole King and Jerry Goffin.
Yeah, I was looking at one of the songs they wrote.
Those four people wrote all the songs that were ever recorded.
They really did, but they wrote this for the Exciters. It was not a big hit for them at all. Tell'em was obviously their big hit. But it's fun. You know, it's a great little version of it. We're playing this because this is actually Mike Vickers' birthday.
Mike Vickers. In Manfred Mann.
From Manfred Mann, yeah. He turned 78. And I was looking at that song and I said, they didn't write that.
I had no idea.
So there
I had
you
absolutely
go.
No idea.
Yes.
All right. Barbara Bush died yesterday at 92 years old. I think that the country, it's my opinion, Tori would know more than I, it's my opinion that the Bush family prepared the country for this very deliberately.
Yes.
By writing a statement that was issued in Barbara Bush's name. Whether or not she wrote it doesn't really matter. But it was to say, look, this is going to happen sooner rather than later. We want everybody to be prepared for this, which is why I think when you saw her children and her grandchildren interviewed before the fact, they were at peace with all of this because they knew it was going to happen.
Yeah.
What did you knew her, I'm sure.
Yeah. Mary Madeline and I used to always laugh. She was the one you'd be afraid of. You'd never be afraid of 41. You know, you'd screw up, make some mistake in the campaign, which we made every single day.
Right.
And he would just laugh and say, don't worry about it. You know, I don't want you to get back down. You never wanted to get crosswise with hers. She was smart. I think she was the smartest politician in the family, the toughest, absolutely toughest. And a terrific person, but absolutely, absolutely dedicated to her family above all else. And I generally don't like doing these things, but I tweeted out something last night. She actually, when I was having my first kid, she gave me really, really good advice. And she said, comes to raising your kids, you want to hug them, you want to read to them, and you want to love them no matter what. Right? Absolutely dedicated to that family.
But even when they scream, oh, yeller him.
Even when they scream, oh, yeller him, you have to forgive. You have to forgive. I've just always been incredibly impressed with her. How she's done everything, right? How she lived her life. Only one, Luke might know this, but Abigail Adams, the only one that was married to a husband and mother. That's tough. That's a tough environment to be in for a long time. And she did that very well. And she was always completely straight with people. Which is hard to do.
She said that remarkable thing when Jeb wanted to run. She said, I think we've had enough. Did you know her through coverage?
Yeah, yeah. No, I met her a few times, especially with my late father. And I per what Tori said, she was always nicknamed the Enforcer.
Is that right?
Yeah, and called her the Sergeant. And I think it says something to have a family in the public spotlight. And Bush 41 was in the spotlight as a young man, as being a very young naval aviator. So they were basically in the spotlight for about 50 years.
Oh, I mean,
they were
married
for 73. And to keep a family like that together and decently out ahead of most scandal is pretty impressive. And she's also, a fun fact, very local, she was a St. Albans mom. Two of her boys graduated from St. Albans, and she was nicknamed Barefoot Barbara, because she used to walk in the front doors to pick up her boys barefoot. And she would take this family station wagon, park it out front, walk in barefoot, grab them, and go on her way.
Yeah.
Casual.
Yeah. One of her greatest lines, she's like, give me a speech somewhere, and she said she would do anything for her husband in terms of his political aspirations except dye her hair, change her outfit, or lose weight. Completely comfortable in her own skin.
She seems to be, and I mean, most first ladies are at least well-liked. But she seems to have been beloved, more so than most. Do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, the nation's grandma. That's what everyone said. What they didn't know is just this spine of steel, right?
Yeah.
But it was her fierceness in such a good way. Fierceness to the family, fierceness to doing what she thought was right for the country at any given time. Her commitment to media literacy. I remember years ago doing something with them on that front. And she could give you chapter and verse the statistics of the value of literacy and why it was such an important cause. And she threw herself into that 150%. Right after she was done, after he left office, it would have been really easy to say, okay, I'm out. I'm going to take care of the grandchildren, these kinds of things. And she stayed engaged in a lot of activities.
So I met her one time. I've probably told this story, but not in recent years. I got very, very fortunate. I got invited to a state dinner when she and 41 were in the White House, and it was after the Olympics in Seoul, Korea, and I got invited, and you're on a receiving line, and she has no idea who I am, and I have no idea how I got there. I later found out that my friend Mark Israti, whose wife was Marlon Fitzwater's sister-in-law, in other words, Mark Israti's wife was the sister of Marlon Fitzwater's wife. And so he got me this. I never knew this, how I got an invite. And I got there, and it was the president at the time of South Korea. That was the way you... There was always one media person invited to a White House state dinner. It was the total thrill of my life to go to this. And on the receiving line, by the time you get to the fourth person on the receiving line, I guess she was the third person on the receiving, whatever it was. But... my name had been announced by a Marine to the president, and by the time it got to Barbara Bush, she said, oh, Mr. Porthauser, so nice to meet you. So I am writing a column, allegedly a humor column, in the Washington Post at that time, and I describe how she said, Mr. Porthauser, so nice to meet you. And I got a signed photo by George and Barbara Bush within a week and a half. Said to Tony Porthauser.
Nice.
And I just thought that was so great. I mean, so and I felt this way about George Bush, and I think most people did, and I've had the pleasure of knowing, you know, playing golf with one of his sons, but I just, everyone said, he's the nicest guy. He's just the nicest guy. He wrote a billion notes, right?
A billion notes.
Like his signature is sort of like Cal Ripken's. It's not worth that much because he wrote a billion notes to people. And the two of them seemed to be nice all the time. I'm not sure that other presidents are described as nice.
Maybe too nice. He was definitely maybe too nice, right? Yeah, is maybe too nice, but adorable.
No, on that point, when I was at NBC, there was a guy who worked at the White House for a long time, tech guy, who I think did sound all the way back to Eisenhower for a long time. And we would always sort of ask him questions, and one of the questions was, who is the nicest? And he goes, oh, by far, George and Barbara Bush. He goes, they're by far the most relatable. He would invite the media to play horseshoes. She would come out with the lemonade, not pretentious, totally comfortable in her own skin, never looking over their shoulder trying to talk to anybody else. And there's something to be said for that. For somebody who's covered every administration since Eisenhower, saying these are the most relatable people, that's a good feather to have in your hat.
So George Bush is at least 93, is he not?
93, 94, yeah.
And Jimmy Carter is in his 90s now.
Yes. Still doing his Habitat for Humanity.
Yeah, they're not going to be around forever. And in a relatively short amount of time, we will be left with...
Bill Clinton's health isn't very good either.
Really? Bill Clinton, George Bush, and Barack Obama. I mean, and Barack Obama the youngest of those three. But, you know, I think that's... Probably where Bill Clinton's health not good.
He looks. Oh, he's a vegan now, and
he looks great.
Well, vegans always look unhealthy.
He had to lose a tremendous amount of weight for those reasons, because after all those times being, you know, governor of Arkansas, going to all the fried chicken fests and all those things, but yeah, his health was not very good a few years ago, and he seems to have bounced back. I mean, we want him around for a long time. Yeah, but I'm just saying, prepare yourself mentally. That would not be crazy.
So the other big story of the day is the Southwest Airlines plane. I have never flown Southwest. I'm probably not inclined to do so now any more than I was 2 days ago. But I've always sort of thought you have to run to your seat, right? You've flown, every man for himself. Right, there's no first class.
Scrappy airline.
You can do the business select where you pay more, which you're guaranteed a top 15 seat, and it also comes with a complimentary alcoholic
beverage.
But
you still have to run.
You're guaranteed a top 15 seat. So if you have a top 15 seat, you're okay. You can also, for a nominal fee of $15, pay to get an early check-in. And if you're
early
between,
tea time.
Yeah, if you're between 0 to about 55, you're okay. And I like Southwest because if you're a professional flyer, you know how to navigate it. It's good stuff. The one thing, though, that's terrifying is you have some stragglers, and the professionals just say, all right, you get your window or you get your aisle. And I was with this guy, and he was a big boy, too, and there was this very skinny girl, and we said, hey, come sit with us in the middle here.
Right.
Great. So we got our – it was all set. We're in the exit row, flying back from Chicago. I'm a big guy. He's a big guy. Skinny girl in the middle. Tons of leg room. And – the stewardess comes up and goes, ma'am, this is emergency exit row. You have a broken ankle. You can't sit here. Oh. And they traded her out for Matt Albers, literally.
Matt Albers.
Like, literally a guy the size of Matt Albers. And so I'm sitting there like, and that's where Southwest can get you.
So the engine blows up. This can't be good.
That's not an exaggeration.
And everybody here today said, let's not talk, right?
We did. We got
don't
here
talk
early.
About it, because
had a little
Tony
confab.
Doesn't like the
Tory said to me, we need to get this out of the way because we don't want to mention it at all when you walk in.
As if I didn't know that this had happened. Yeah. My reaction to this is exactly the same as my reaction to the Sullenberger landing in the East River, which is a great act of heroism and what pilots do. I talked to a pilot yesterday about this, and he said, we like takeoff and landing. We don't like sitting there for 8 hours on autopilot. That's not why we're in it. We're in it because we take off, we fly, we land, we like to do that. That's why a lot of really great pilots take small routes, you know, go up and down four times in a day because they're happy to do that. This was a circumstance. There can be nothing, you know, we can get into the details of what's worse, the skin of the airplane falling. I mean, it doesn't really matter. You're at altitude and something catastrophic happens. There's really nothing worse than that. And what was explained to me was you need to bring that plane down 7,000 feet a minute, which is a very steep dive, to get to where you don't need the oxygen, where people can breathe, which is about 10,000 or 12,000 feet. You got to really do this. You have to make sure that happens. You need air traffic control to clear the space and alert everybody what is going on here. And they landed it. And they landed it. There was loss of life, one person, but everybody else was fine. The Sullenberger thing, he landed it.
Yeah.
Everybody was fine. And pilots will say to you, that's the job. That's what we're supposed to do. To me, this is tremendously affirming of airplanes in general and pilots specifically and air traffic controllers specifically. And you felt I wouldn't feel this way.
Well, just given your really well known fear of flying in general.
Well, it doesn't actually make me less confident. No, because I think this is going to happen all the time. That's pretty much what I think.
But you have a faith in the pilots, which is good.
I always try to meet the pilots.
Yeah. Monday night, when I was flying back from Florida, this is kind of scary. It happened to me one time before, but it's always scary. When we were coming in for landing at DCA, there was a gust of wind
that blew the
plane back, or boot farther forward. So we actually landed and had to take back off right again.
Yeah.
And you think to yourself, that's actually quite dangerous in the scheme of things because you're running out of runway space. And I said to the pilot afterwards, because I'm a little bit of a nervous flyer like you, I said, did that freak you out? He goes, exactly. He says, no, that's what we train for. Because that's what we're trained to do. And I said, yeah. And he got great crew cut and old guys. And he's probably done this 20,000 hours.
And she was a Navy fighter pilot, I think.
Yeah.
The pilot is the Southwest.
This is actually what they do. They spend so much time in flight simulators.
Oh, sure.
And these things come up. So where you're not prepared, to the degree that they can be prepared, they are. And then apparently, just saying, okay, you can feel free to walk about the cabin for the next 6 hours as we go to, Europe. That's not their deal. So I am buoyed by this.
I am indeed.
So we'll get out of here now.
Good hands.
I really respect pilots. Really respect pilots. That some people I don't think all that much of. Guys like me who go on TV and pretend to know things. We're dopes, but pilots are pretty good. Email and jingle when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Well, a box of wine just came.
Uh-oh.
I'm not allowed to open because the wine tyrant told me to wait. Don't think I understand. Every time first leaf arrives, well, I have to wait so long. Because Bootsy's mom reminds me that I'm wrong. Yes, I do like Chardonnay, especially the free stuff, but it's not the kind of thing I would rate. I just know how to drink it, and every time it's red or white, cause I find champagne too strong. And then Bootsy's mom reminds me that I'm wrong.
Brad Weiss.
Lovely.
Perfect. Perfect. Before we get into the mailbag, let me say thanks to Brian Windhorst for coming on. Let me thank the sponsors today, First Leaf and Movement Sunglasses. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. If you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. From Jim Frent in Lansing, Michigan. Does this count as a David Aldridge experience? I made my first ever trip to Augusta for the Monday practice round, drove the same godforsaken back roads as you to Savannah on Monday night, and then headed north for my first ever trip to Pinehurst on Wednesday. Being a little, I played number 7 instead of number 2, and I never spotted a bald orange man in Augusta or Pinehurst, but I was yelling at the podcast on Friday just like you yell at the TV. Just wanted to let you know that the trip from Pinehurst to my sister's place in Arlington via I-95 wasn't much faster than your Amtrak experience. Originally, the capper for the trip was to be my first ever visit to Chatter on Friday morning before returning to Michigan, but it's just as well as your for-profit restaurant that I visit another time. I'm not sure I could afford the $12 T-shirt after dropping almost 400% of Andy Poley's annual clothing allowance within 20 minutes in the Augusta souvenir shop, which is what people do. Wendell Wall, South Bend, Indiana. When I first read these words of William Knack, I wept. I still get choked up reading them. Belmont Park began to shake. The whole place was on its feet. Turning for home, Secretariat was 20 in front, having run the mile in 159 flat, faster than his derby time. He came home alone. He opened his lead to 25, 26, 27, 28. As rhythmic as a rocking course, he never missed a beat. Rest in peace, Mr. Knack, and give Secretariat a kiss on the nose from us all.
Nice.
Most thrilling performance I think I've ever seen in my life was Secretariat at the Belmont. I guess that's 1973 when he won. He won the Triple Crown, set records every single time he ran. Still stands. Josh Cromwell, Moselle, Mississippi. If we're making wagers on Bootsy's first word, I've got my money on Orchid. I'm also putting a few bucks on the exacta that his first two words will be Orchid, followed by an expletive. Mike from Manhattan. I know you often get invited to weddings, sometimes to birthday parties, and you never go. But I have an offer for you that I think is irresistible. My wife is pregnant. She's due with our baby boy sometime around Memorial Day. As the man, I've been tasked with getting the moil. I was listening to your pod the other day, and you referred to as Dr. Kornheiser. I thought, wow, this is great. He's Jewish. He's a doctor. He's used to performing in front of a crowd. Sounds like the perfect moil. No. No. For those of you who don't know what it is, no.
No.
Steady hand.
We live in Manhattan, 10 blocks from Penn Station. We'd be honored if you could circumcise our Yeah. I'll hang up and listen. No.
Oh, that's a first.
Jason Blazer, Lake Orion, Michigan. I noticed you didn't once inquire about your movement glasses during your discussion with Howard Feynman. It wasn't until Nigel's news that it became a pressing issue. It's almost as if you hold in higher regard 3DP's interpretation of the news over Nigel's. Hashtag sad at failing Nigel. Steve Hendricks. Longtime listener living in Brussels, love the show. To add to your story about sales tax, you're supposed to pay sales tax when you buy something online, but the seller does not collect the tax unless you're both in the same state. So if you live in California, you're supposed to self-report your online purchases and pay your sales tax. But of course, no one ever does this. Kevin Goldberg, Washington, D.C. I had a wonderful David Aldridge moment when I was listening to the Friday, April 13th show. And I heard Jonathan Tannenwald's birthday shout out to his father, Peter. I've heard Jonathan and certainly his mother, Carol, mentioned on the show before, but this might be the first mention of Peter Tannenwald, who happens to be one of my law partners. As it's true, he really does love the ribs at Chatter. When you initially bought the restaurant formerly known as Chad's, and I'd mentioned how Carol and Jonathan must be so happy, he'd always say, it's fine as long as they don't mess with the ribs. Speaking of David Aldridge moments, please say David. Tell David I said hello. In the unlikely event he doesn't remember me, tell him I met him last summer at the 50th birthday party for his former roommate at the American University. You can choose to identify Jim Brady or not. Of course, I know Jim Brady well. If he still doesn't remember, just mention these two words, Steve Hood. Tom Hirsch writes, if you inspect any of your thousands of Safeway tokens, you would find barcodes on them. Using your phone, you can scan your pieces, all four on the token, onto a virtual board that will notify you of a winner. Then you can use the same phone to find backup sideways and say backup Safeways and directions, listen to radio and music, and wave to Bootsy wherever he is. It's overwhelming what these phones can do. They're very frightening. I don't like that. Andrew in Nashua, New Hampshire. Drove down to Virginia a few months back, stopped by Assateague, Maryland. Is that where they breed the horses from Uranus? It's a very funny line. Richard Pearson, Campbell, Missouri. I had a David Aldridge moment with Tori Clark tonight while watching the Frontline episode on PBS. I heard her speaking before she appeared on screen, and I immediately said, that's Tori Clark. Seconds later, a woman with the caption name of Victoria Clark appeared. It was all very exciting. Do you know what that's from?
It was a special on John McCain, I think.
And you were on it?
Yes.
Fantastic. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
He's freaking genius!
Thanks, everybody. Yay.
Past, between the acts, he good.